Welcome in to another episode of We're Talking. Today, we're talking basketball, Raging Cajun basketball with Mike Hebert. How are you doing this afternoon, Mike?
I'm doing very well. I'm still very grateful of all the great birthday wishes I received over the weekend since I, last Friday, I turned 67, and people from all over the country actually reached out to me. I'm feeling very blessed.
Well, happy birthday. I saw you Thursday night. I saw you Saturday night, and both times I forgot to tell you happy birthday, so I'm going to tell you happy birthday right now. I hope your birthday was great.
Well, someone told me what was I asking. I said I wanted half my present on Thursday night and the other half my present on Saturday night with Cajun victories. And lo and behold, the guys pulled it out for me both times.
Boy, you're being a little greedy though, huh? Half and half.
Yeah, I wanted two. Yeah. The day before and the day after.
Nah, I tell you what, let's jump right in. Let's start talking about those games. I'm going to give a quick my quick thoughts on it, and you can ask me questions later on after I get through asking questions with you. But I thought Thursday night's game was probably the best game the Cajuns played from start to finish all season long. What were your thoughts? Let's start out with the first half.
I agree on that. And the game started out with some threes by Cantrell and Greg. And a lot of people don't appreciate this. In basketball, when you see shots go down, it can fuel your energy on defense. It just gives you a little more pump. And I saw that from the opening tip. The Cajuns knew they were in a desperate situation. They were going to give their maximum effort regardless how it turned out. So those threes by Greg and Cantrell, kept going all night long. But it was also obvious that Demas was going to control the game because they were catching those balls right in the prime shooting position. He was delivering the ball perfectly to them. So, felt real optimistic. We took the lead early on, and we almost led wire to wire. I think it was 2-2. We led wire to wire after that.
Yes, there was only one score tied, and then there was no lead changes. So,
yeah. Well, the other thing I noticed in general observations that one of the guys we did not talk about when we previewed the game was a guy named Hassey. I think he's a transfer. I forget, maybe UAB or something. For USM, and he's a 6'9", plays small forward, and we ended up having to guard him with some of our smaller guys. So I knew that was going to be a challenge. Another thing I noticed in the first half when Kobe came in, he was still not at game speed. Listening to Coach Marlin this morning in an interview, he said, hey, the matchup against Southern Miss wasn't really great for him. So I've mentioned before that Coach oftentimes can have a pretty good feel who's on that night and who's not and who's going to play and who's not based upon the way their 2-3 minutes go. And so Kobe didn't play much more. But, the threes early in the half got us out to the lead. And then, it was sort of a midway 10-point game. Got sloppy from 7 minutes to 5 minutes, 2 minutes to go. Gets a bad 5 minutes there. Then Joe hit a three and Cantrell hits another one. And all of a sudden, it's a 16-point lead. It comes 14 and a half. But I think everybody in the arena felt comfortable. We said on the road trip, you got to make threes in the first half. You got to play defense. You got to get to the line. We did all that. So a real good half.
My thoughts real quick, a little bit more thoughts on this was you mentioned the threes and how it sparks the defense. I totally agree with you because players is a natural thing when you, whether it's in life or playing basketball. I think when we mess something up, we tend to get a little down on ourselves maybe and hang our head. And if you're making those shots, you're proud. You got your head up. You're looking at where the other team is coming down from you. So I totally agree with you there on the comment about how making a shot can spur your defense.
Yeah, it also beyond the confidence, it just allows you to get back on defense and set yourself up where you can be in the correct position versus being in a scramble. There is something in life on that. I bowl and lo and behold, I'll get first four or five frames. I'm doing fine. As soon as I get a split, almost without fail, the next frame is going to be an open. And I have a bowling coach who tells me, it's like everything else in life. You got to forget it. You can't get it back. You have to just focus on your next one. But I think in basketball, the same thing happens. When you miss a shot, you're coming down court. You may be thinking of your next shot versus the defensive play you have to execute.
But you brought up a good point, too, which I had never really thought of. By making the basket, you usually give your team 2 to 3 seconds, maybe a little bit longer, to get back on defense before the ball gets back in play. So you're actually able to get set up a little better. And I've really never thought of it in that term. So thank you.
Also, teams that like to press, you have to score before you can press. You don't score, you can't set up your press unless it's out of bounds. And we don't press a lot, but at times we do. So threes throughout the game are sometimes overlooked because the numbers at the end might be similar. In fact, in this game, we were very similar. But you make them early, and you set the tone. And that's what happened both times this weekend. So I feel real good at halftime. We can go on the second half unless you have any more first half thoughts.
Well, the only thing I will say on the first half and your point to Themis Faulks, I thought he played an outstanding game. When he drove to the basket, he did not pick up his dribble or try to jump in the air and then look for somebody. He either brought it back out or he drove to the basket strong. I liked his play as well in the first half. So
yeah. Yeah, when we wrap up that game, I'll mention something else about him.
Okay.
Okay, the second half starts. And, you know, and the team are still filling each other out. But then there's a strange call on Jordan Brown that I still can't understand. There's a loose ball on the floor. It's a scramble. You know, there's five or six guys on the floor all fighting for the ball. The refs call, blow a whistle. I'm 100% confident they're going to call jump ball because, you know, it's a loose scramble on the floor. And they call a foul on Jordan. Now, maybe they saw something I didn't. Maybe when he was loose on the floor, he pushed something. But, you know, I was confused about that. And I think the Cajuns were too. Because lo and behold, that possession, and it was going to be the Cajuns' ball on the possession arrow, they hit a three. That keeps them in the game. Okay, so, you know, really feel frustrated about that. Shortly after that, Themis, you talk about how well he played, has to go out. Remember, we don't have Michael Thomas. He's still out with an injury. In fact, he wasn't even in the arena in both games. I think it's pretty obvious now that it's a concussion. Hopefully, he'll be back on the road trip. But, you know, Themis can't play, you know, 38 minutes like he did at Old Dominion. I think he played 34 in this game. So Southern Miss decides, okay, they probably had this plan. When Themis goes out, we're going to press. That's there not to be a mistake. Because it looks like the Cajuns were prepared for it. I'm going to give credit to Donovan Cates, who had the scout, because he was really energized as the substitute and assistant coach off the bench. The Cajuns handled that press well. Not one guy on the dribble it. They just handled the press the way you should with passing the ball. You know, Dalcourt, Williams, Garnett. Pass the ball in the court, and we either got fouled or we got a basket. So good job of the Cajun coaching staff preparing for their press when Themis goes out. And he comes back in, and things are back to normal. Did you notice that?
Yeah, he's definitely a key with Michael Thomas being out right now. And just to some of the point, I've had some friends ask me, why isn't Michael Thomas on the bench? Well, because when you're in concussion protocol, if that is – what he's in there for, you don't want him being hit by an elbow when the team gets into a huddle or a player is coming out of the huddle or anything like that. You want him away from the team. You don't want any more hits, blows to the head or whatever it may be. So just some thoughts there on why Michael Thomas is not on the bench possibly.
I can elaborate on that. A couple of years ago, one of the kids I coached bowling, as a volunteer coach at a local high school, had a concussion from soccer, and she was not allowed to bowl, believe it or not, until she received some noise-canceling headphones. Noise is one of the things you have to avoid in coming back from a concussion. And, of course, okay. The basketball game with the band on that, it's going to be a lot of noise. So that's why he wasn't even in the arena.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. But anyway, the Cajuns handled the point when Michael Thomas was not there, and Themis has to go in. After a short timeout, they actually put that. They usually try to pull him around the upcoming media timeout, you know, where he gets a minute on the bench, then the media timeout's another couple of minutes, maybe another one. So they do that with Jordan as well. But anyway, Southern Miss doesn't go away. They hang in there, you know. We talked about Crowley and Pinckney last week, their best guard and their best outside guy. Pinckney stepped out as their big man. He hit a couple of threes, kept them in the game. In fact, he did the same thing at ULM this past weekend, let them pull that one out on Saturday. But I thought a big play in the game was shot clocks running down, and Jalen Dalcourt, who had hit one of the threes in the first half, hits a mid-range to sort of stymie. And he gets a big rebound, and he also hits a couple of big free throws. So good contribution from the bench there by Jalen. That held them off. And then, you know, we had a 14-point lead. I think they cut it to 8. You get to 2-3 minutes there, and then they have to start fouling, and we just hold on to the lead. You know, this game was won in the first half. There's not really as much to say about the second half.
No, a couple of things I want to bring up, though. We talked about the defense, and we knew Crowley was going to be the guy that we had to stop. And if you stop him, someone else is probably going to get loose, and that's what happened. But at the same time, we held Crowley scoreless through the first 8 minutes, 7 minutes of the game, and he hit a jumper, then he hit two free throws later on. But he only had 4 points in the first half, shot a quick three at the beginning of the second half, and went all the way to the five-minute mark before he scored again, five-minute mark left in the game before he scored again with two free throws. Cajun defense totally shut him down, and that's what we had to do.
Well, I have the heroes of the game here to conclude that game, and Kentrell Garnett, you know, with 20 points, six threes, but for most of the game, he had the defensive assignment on Crowley, and he just seemed to actually beat him to the spot where he wanted to when Crowley had the ball. So Kentrell was the hero of the game on offense and defense that game. And then, of course, we talked about Timus Folks. You know, he had double figures, controlled the game. His defense also was much better than it was on the road trip. So, in fact, I would say Timus should be considered for maybe conference player of the week because he did okay against Georgia State as well. And I mentioned earlier the Hasse, however you pronounce his name. He's 6'9". Most of the game, Greg Williams is on him. Greg had only 6 points, I believe. But when you have to guard a guy 6 inches taller than you and that much energy expended, it may affect your offense. So I put Greg down there as one of the heroes of the game as well. That's about all I had for this game for the 3 years. I will say this. I have one concluding comment. You have one before we wrap up that game?
No, I'm good, I believe. I want to talk. I'll talk about somebody else, but I want to talk about it after the next game because I think it's a two-game spurt that he's played well in.
Okay. And that in the post game, because he was probably the most effective player, Timus Folks made some interesting comments. He said after the road trip, he saw some comments on social media that were sort of negative towards their coaching staff, and he took offense to that. I think he says, well, I don't appreciate it. Now, I don't necessarily make a big deal when fans are critical of a coaching staff, because after a loss, it's normal. Every fan base in America is going to do that. They could maybe go towards their coaches versus the players. And we ourselves were perhaps a little critical in our podcast last week of the road trip. I don't think we were inaccurate, but we second-guessed some things. And that's normal. But a player's not going to look at it that way. He sees his coach getting blamed for the loss, and he'll say, it's not his fault we lost. It's my fault we lost. So my response to that is, okay, fans, next time we lose or whatever, keep criticizing the coaching staff and cause the Steamers to keep playing that way because he was outstanding over the weekend.
Absolutely. Did a great job. So, yeah.
Do you have any response to his comments?
I just think the only thing I'll say is you can tell the respect that a coach and a player or a coach has for his players and the players have for the coach when they defend each other like that. And I like to see that. I think that's a good sign moving forward. So.
Okay. All right. Okay. If that's what it takes, fans, keep piling it on. Because he wants to play that way. Let's whatever it takes. Okay. We can wrap that one up and we can go to Georgia State if you like.
Absolutely. That's what it's one of those games, Georgia State, that Georgia State's not having their best year. They struggled a little bit at the beginning of the season last year, came on strong and ended up winning the conference tournament. But anytime you can beat Georgia State, it's a good day in Cajun land, whether it's here or there. So what were your thoughts on the first half?
Okay. Well, I thought we started a little slow. They played a little zone. They doubled Jordan, tripled him, but, starting the zone and the ball go towards him. Cajuns didn't take the lead until 12 minutes to go in the half when Dalcourt hit a three. And I don't think we lost the lead again. And that made it 13-12 or something like that. So we led from – so that'd be 32 minutes of the game we led?
Yep.
Yeah. So that was probably a factor of the defense they had. I mentioned Jordan Dalcourt hit a three. Jordan did a better job, even though he was not scoring as well from the field. I think he was 4-for-12. Throwing the ball out, he had a 4 assists, which I think was a season high. And Dalcourt made 3 of them. And I think 2 of them were assists from Jordan. And we talked last week about how to shoot the ball, and Jalen needed to have a little bit more arc. And I think actually in both games, he shot the ball a little more arc, a little more technically correct. And I think that's why he had success.
I agree. I like the way that Jordan played. I think his free throw shooting is getting better. We all like to concentrate on the misses, but he was 8 for 10 in the Georgia State game, 4 for 6 in the previous game. I think Jordan did an excellent job of not just recognizing the double team, but recognizing the open player and kicking him back out. I really liked his game those last two games. If we get that Jordan Brown every game, Cajuns are going to win a lot of games.
Yeah, and he could even be better if he starts. In some of the shots he missed, you know, he normally makes a little hook shot in the lane or left it a little short. But you know, if he goes 8 for 10 from the free throw line, and he got to the line too, which didn't really happen as much as we should have in the previous road trip. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that I don't really like having five bench players in at one time, and I noticed in this game, at one point in the first half, coach had four of the bench players in. But Timus Folks, the point guard, was still in there. So I really like that. So having the guy who runs the show be in there, that's probably the most important position. So hopefully we'll see more of that going forward. Couple other thoughts in the first half. Kobe Julian hit a three in the first half, and he hit one actually from sort of out in front versus the baseline. And maybe that's why he needs to take more of them, but he had good form on that. He also hit a free throw. He just looked like he was moving better in that game. I think so far that might be his best game, even though he may have scored a couple more in the other points. In previous games, but again,
I was just going to say, I think the game was a little slowed down for Kobe against Georgia State and allowed him those opportunities to square his feet up and make those shots.
Yeah, could be. Just like Southern Miss, threes in the first half spur some defensive energy and gives us out a lead. We had 7 in the first half against Southern Miss. We had 6 this game, 3 by Jalen Delcourt. And again, that fueled our energy on defense. There were a couple of times late in the first half that we forced 2 shot clock violations. Looking at Georgia State's offense, it looked like late in the half, or late in the shot clock, that is, they couldn't get anything going. They'd just have their big men drive. The big men would get the pass from the guard, the dribble handoff of them drive. And forcing 2 shot clock violations is unusual in any game, much less twice in the half. And I bet I know the name of the guy you could speak about. Joe Charles was responsible for a lot of that because he was rotating very well than their big men drove.
You're absolutely right. I think Joe Charles has progressively gotten better this season. In each year he's played with the Cajun, he is an absolute fun player to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's not hitting his threes as well as we'd like right now. He's a little bit off, but he does not let that affect the rest of his game. You know, he plays hard no matter what. And he's scoring the ball inside better. He's not missing shots. He's strong. He's making his layups. Another key play late in the first half, rather, was Cajuns get a stop with about, I don't know, 15 seconds to go. I think they forced a turnover. And Cajuns called timeout. We run a last play. I've heard people in the past complain our last second or last shot of the halves can be run a little bit more efficiently. And again, Timus Folks makes a great move, goes right, goes left, ends up with a dunk to Jordan. So it gives the Cajuns a 15-point lead at halftime. I knew Georgia State would come back because they'd come back against ULM the previous game, and they've got some talented players, but it sure made you feel good at halftime, ending the half on a dunk.
Absolutely. Fun. Fun to watch. Which, well, I don't think we mentioned it, so let me go back real quick to the Southern Miss game. I think Greg Williams dunk in the second half, at the start of the second half, really set the tone for the second half and let the Cajun players go wild. I mean, I just thought that was one of the plays I meant to mention earlier. So
you're correct. It gave the Cajuns right back that 16-point lead, and we let them, I guess, hold off Southern Miss either. You had a little more cushion there. Yeah. Speaking of Greg Williams, in the second half, it looked like the design was to have Greg drive the baseline, and they had some good plays designed, but I give Georgia State credit. They stole the ball a couple of those passes. Maybe Lewis wasn't ready for one, or Greg got a charge. I think he got a dunk in that game, too, later on. But the 3 straight turnovers to start the half against Georgia State, and Coach quickly calls timeout, and we got back at the rhythm pretty quick, started getting into the line. Yeah, we didn't get it 1-3 in the second half, from my recall, in that game.
No, we didn't. I'm just looking at that now. 6-11 in the first half, 6-4-11 in the first half, 55%, but then 0-4 in the second half. So, but I guess we didn't need it. So
yeah. Well, George, we're shooting the ball a little worse there. Georgia State's got some big men. They're getting some baskets inside. They're getting to the line a lot. Number two, I forget his name. I think it was Massey. Yeah, he was getting some balls on hands on balls in the paint, and he led the line. And so they're making some free throws. Overall, we shot the ball well from the free throw line early in the game. But in the middle of the second half, we missed a few. I think Kobe missed two, and then we'd make one, miss one. Their guard is named their best, Odom. You know, he scored 18 points, and coach said in the post game, he's not really known as a 3-point shooter, but he makes a couple of big ones late to get the lead down to five. But even though when it got down to five, and they had some nice blocks on that too. You know, Cajuns looked like something. Joe Charles had won, so give the Panthers some credit. I never felt that we were really in danger of losing the game. Did you feel the same?
Yeah, there are times that you can kind of feel the game slipping away, and there are other times that, you know, you feel like, hey, it's not a big deal. Move on to the next play. Let's pick it up on the next one. And I really felt that way all pretty much the whole second half. I really enjoyed that game.
Yeah, well, they cut the lead to five, but I think we scored right after, got it to seven, and maybe right back to nine, and it stayed, you know, 6-10 for most of the game. There was a big offensive rebound. We talked about Jordan not scoring as well from the field as he normally does, but he's making his free throws, and he got a big one, put it back in, and helped us extend the lead out again. At the end of the game, it took forever. There were free throws on both teams called, you know. Like I said, man, like, what was that, 50-some free throws taken in the game?
Yeah, that's 41. No, I'm sorry. You're right. 49.
26, 30.
I'm on the wrong thing. 56.
56. Cajuns shot 73%, and they shot 69%, which those percentages are pretty normal for college teams. But those officials and Coach Marlin expected it are known to have a pretty tight whistle. But the Cajuns made it when they had to. And end up winning by eight. Here's my key stat of the game. The bench, 28 points. I mentioned the fact in some of the games in the past that we need more scoring from the bench. I remember one of the games on the road trip, the bench only had 2 points in the first half. But if we score, get 28 points from our bench, we're going to win a lot of games.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things I wanted to bring up, too. I think one of the guys, even though we played 6 minutes, had 5 points, Isaiah Richards, you know, 3-for-4 from the free throw line too, which I thought was very impressive. You know, Isaiah Richards is not known for his free throw shooting. So
no, he's not. He's probably 50%. And one of those was a 1-and-1, which is double the pressure. Yeah. In fact, I think we did pretty well in our 1-and-1 throughout the weekend.
Yep.
You wanted to talk about Joe Charles. You have anything else to say about him, about what you said earlier?
Well, I just like the way he's playing. He's always hustling. He's there on defense. I think his defense is underrated. I don't think it's things that we show up in the box scores. I think it's one of those things where Joe Charles has such long arms that he's able to bat the ball away from the other player, and somebody else may get the steal, even though it was Joe Charles that got the knockaway. And the other thing that I really want to bring up is Jordan Brown, 6 offensive rebounds, had 10 overall, had a double-double. I really like it when Jordan can get some offensive rebounds. I think that's important for this team. 13 offensive rebounds overall. So a good night for our team, in my opinion. And back to the point, 13 assists and only 11 turnovers. So
let me add on that. In all 4 conference games, the Cajuns have had more assists than their opponents and less turnovers than their opponents. All 4 of them, including 2 on the road. You remember the 2 on the road was the 3-point shooting was a little off in the first half in both games. And we didn't get to the line enough, and our opponents got to the line a lot. So everything we needed to do to have success and turn the previous results around, we did. We made some first half threes that spurred our defensive energy. We got to the line. We made them. We continued to handle the ball well. Forced some turnovers, and our opponents didn't get to the line as often. I realized some of that was because we had the lead late, but even beyond that, we were still doing a better job. Is that just home and away cooking? I don't know. I really didn't see the officials or the opposing coaches really complain too much about the officiating.
No, I think the real problem that I had with the officiating was, I know I heard a lot of people say Jordan Brown got hacked. I think they're letting the game be more physical. The one problem I did have, and you brought it up, when Jordan was on the floor going for the ball, that was a very cheap and a foul that I don't think he deserved.
Yeah, that was against Southern Miss.
Yep.
But the most optimistic thing about Jordan was his 4 assists in the Georgia State game. He didn't turn the ball over as much. He threw it back out quicker. And let me go back to Southern Miss, too. One of them, we talked about the good job we did on Crowley. They forced 4 turnovers from him in that game. So, yeah, so really nothing to complain about over the weekend. Now, can we continue that level of play as we go forward? So why don't we take a break, and we'll get ready to talk about the 2 upcoming games.
Absolutely. You've been listening to We're Talking. We're talking baseball, basketball. Jeez, I got baseball on my mind. Sent out some emails today, and that's what I'm thinking about what I need to do next. But we're talking basketball, Raging Cajun basketball with Mike Hebert. And you're listening to We're Talking. Welcome back into We're Talking. We're talking basketball, Raging Cajun basketball with Mike Hebert. Mike, I know there's been a lot of talk. It's kind of weird to watch this. I feel like sometimes, you know, you had the women's team go from Texas State to Arkansas State, and I think one of their flights were canceled, so they ended up having to drive up there. If that wasn't us, it might have been somebody else. I forgot who I was talking to about that. But they've got some weird travel this season. Have you noticed that?
Yeah. Yes, Coach Broadhead was actually on the radio this morning with Scott Prather, and he was talking about the travel in the league. Our women actually went from Southern Miss to Texas State this past weekend, you know, and that required, you know, traveling to Houston, to Austin, and other schools got things worse than that in some of their schedules. He did mention one interesting comment. He said, James Madison women actually chartered to Southern Miss from Virginia. They were actually in Hattiesburg before our women even left, when they're getting up at the airport at 4 o'clock. So if one school can actually afford to send their women's teams, I'm sure they're sending the men's teams too, because of Title IX. So they couldn't send their men's team and not their women's team on charters. That's a huge advantage. So as the season continues, you may see James Madison getting a little advantage on that, because their travel is not going to be as bad.
Well, I don't know if they're chartering all of those games. I do know that the Cajuns men and women both have a game that they will be chartering this year. So
yeah, one is – it's unusual to do more than one. Yes. So, but if James Madison did it once, I bet they do it again. But it's an issue with all of the schools so spread out, you know, from West Virginia to Texas. And Coach Marlin was mentioning on one of his radio interviews today that, you know, it's not as bad for us as some other schools, because you're not on one end or the other. But the league coaches are looking at trying to revise this schedule thing, wondering if we can go back to travel partners. I don't know how you do it with 14 teams, 7 in the Eastern time zone and 7 in the Central time zone. One of the other options is going through Wednesday, Saturday. I think the coaches would like that. But the problem with that is the SEC plays on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so you'll end up having the officials issue come up again. So those are going to be interesting in upcoming league meetings on the travel. But we do have travel this weekend. I'm sure we're going to bust to Monroe tomorrow, probably to play Thursday night. And we may be busting from Monroe to Hattis to Mobile for South Alabama on Saturday afternoon. I think we have 2 ESPN Plus games again. 7 o'clock Thursday night in Monroe, 3 o'clock Saturday afternoon in Mobile. So we can preview Monroe now, if you don't mind.
Yeah, let's go into it. ULM is 7-10 overall. I think a surprising 3-1 in conference play. Picked to be at the bottom of the conference. Started out conference play 3-0. after we played Southern Miss. Southern Miss went up to Monroe and beat ULM 65-60. So overall, ULM's having a good year in conference play, struggled in the non-conference section, but some pretty decent teams that they lost to, in my opinion.
Yes, they only won one Division I game in pre-conference, and that was against Lamar. Yeah. Lamar is struggling this year. That may have been good scheduling on the Warhawks' part. So whatever good juju they got in that game, they've actually carried it over into the regular season. Probably gave them some confidence. They're averaging they're averaging 71 points a game, and they're giving up 69. That 71 is high because they did very well in their three non-D1 games, scored over 100, I think, in all three of them. And I don't believe their opponents were nearly the quality of the opponents the Cajuns had in their three non-D1s. So that maybe they don't really want to score in the 70s. They want to score in the 60s. Coach Marlin said in his radio interview this morning, he thinks they'd love to have the game in the 50s when we play up there on Thursday night. You look at their four games they've played so far. Their first game against Texas State, they won a game shooting in the 20s, which tells you they're actually a pretty good defensive team. Then they had their best shooting game of the year when they went to Arkansas State, so they started 2-0 on the road. Georgia State was who they played the night we played Southern Miss. They got out to a big lead. Georgia State cut it down to 2 late in the game, but then the Warhawks were able to pull it off with some free throws. And you mentioned the Southern Miss game. They actually had a 13-point lead in the first half in that game. And by halftime, it was close all the way. Pinckney hit a big shot for Southern Miss to give them the lead, and they pulled it out. So why is the last two games, even at home, is ULM having leads and having struggled to hold on? And maybe because they only play 7 guys in their game against Georgia State on Thursday night. Their bench guys played a total of 24 minutes, and it was 16 on Saturday. So I've heard some other people said, well, can the Cajuns take advantage of that? Can our bench, yeah. Well, if we play like we did against Georgia State, yeah, we will. We'll probably be successful if our bench can contribute the way they did. But it's road versus home again, so we'll see how that is a factor. ULM's two best players are a guard, number 11, LaCour. He had over 20 in both games over the weekend. He's a transfer from UAB. It's common, like when we talk about the best players in the league, we're talking about transfers often as we do this week to week. It's not too surprising. He had 20 in both games. Their best offensive player is a big, tall, white guy named Howell. He played last year. He almost had a double-double against Georgia State. I think he did against he almost had a double-double from points to rebounds, and he almost had a double-double in the game against ULM. So there's a guy Jordan may have a little trouble with, can match up well with him physically. So let's see. I think we've covered him. Oh, yeah, I'll say one thing about them. They're allowing 42% field goals on the season, and they're making about 43. However, in the four conference games, the field goal percentage they're allowing is in the mid-30s. So defensively, even though they may not be shooting the ball as well, they're a team. I guess Coach Richard is really good at a defensive coach at preaching it. You know, we'll have to actually shoot the ball well. Yeah. And whenever we get into these kind of games and the other team wants to limit the possessions the way the old Texas State teams used to, you have to make sure you don't turn it over. Sometimes because you playing defense so long, because, you know, they're running the shot clock down to 10 seconds or less. When you get the ball, you're a little anxious to shoot it. You can't do that. You know, you actually have to run your offense and be as patient as they are. And ideally, you can get out to a lead, force the tempo, make them play faster than they want to, and then you have control of the game.
Well, you know, you talked about the tempo there, and you know, their last two games, they've had a combined 9 points on fast breaks and a combined 7 points from their bench. But one thing that we know throughout the years, and people don't want to hear this, but it's a fact, ULM always plays us tough up there. I don't care who the team was, the 2018 team, we needed Stove to hit a bucket from half court to get out of there with a win. I believe that was the 2018 team. It might have been
that was the 17 team.
All right, 17.
That's the 17 team. But the 18 team is the one team in recent years that has blown them out.
Okay.
We won by over 20. But to your point, it was a game at halftime, and within 10 minutes to go, it was still a 10-point game. We didn't blow them out in the last 10 minutes of the game.
So
it's a tough game no matter what. Last year, I know we had Akuba with us, who was a pretty good defensive player protecting the middle. He's no longer with us, but maybe Lewis can score more than he did. Jordan Brown hit a 1-1 with a, I don't know, 5 or 6 seconds left in the game to win it. A 1-1. So the whole half had gone, and we hadn't, Monroe had just gotten into their 8th foul. And Jordan Brown, who was talked about his free throw shooting, how much it's improved. But last year, you know, he was not doing as well as he is this year. Hopefully that continues. So that shows how tough it was. You know, he misses the front end of 1-1. We lose up there. And then we ended up beating him here a couple week or two later by about 5. So, and this year, even though their overall team has only got 7 guys, they've added a significant transfer who was a double-figure scorer at UAB. So, whatever you look at ULM, I go back to Coach Richard. His team's going to be well-prepared. He knows how to actually play against the Cajuns.
And you've got to believe that, they all have, from the players to the fans, they want to beat the Cajuns more than anybody. You know, we laugh a lot about, oh, we're everybody's Super Bowl or whatever they want to call it. But this is truly the one game or one of the games, the most important games to them are when they play the Cajuns year in and year out. So,
yeah, it goes for all sports. We saw it in football this year.
Yes.
But beyond that, beyond, you know, just the natural some people don't like him call him a rivalry, but when you play him every year and how tough as they play us, the natural affinity to want to beat a nearby school, they're 3-1 in the league. We're 2-2. Forget about that. Whoever they're playing, you know, all of a sudden they lose this game, they're 3-2, and the team and we'll have the tiebreak on it because we'll have beaten them. So it's a huge game from a standings perspective.
Absolutely. Any last thoughts on them?
I think we're thinking about everything. Yeah. Just they want to slow the game down.
So what would you say then? I know you kind of mentioned it, but let's reiterate. What do you think the key to the game is then? If they're going to try to slow it down, what's going to be the key for us?
Our bench actually contributing and staying in the game early in the half. You know, they're going to be up for the game. It's probably going to be tight in the first half. Maybe just, you know, we don't want to be down 20 like we were at Old Dominion. You know, probably not going to make as many threes in the first half as we did in the last 2 home games because the game won't be as fast-paced. But stay close, have the bench contribute, and in the last few minutes, maybe we can actually handle it then, put it away at that point. Good expected team. To be close with 5 minutes to go. Yeah. So what happened against the last 2 games, you know, I think their short bench hurt them and they didn't hold the lead. They ended up pulling one out. Whenever you can win a game like they did at Texas State, shooting 27%, that actually gives me respect for that team. That shows they don't let their offense affect their defensive play. And so if we're not hitting as well as we did in the 2 home games in the first half, we got to have the defensive energy regardless.
Yes. All right. Just so you guys know, game's at 6:30, not a 6 o'clock or a 7 o'clock start.
Thanks for that. 6:30
start. So,
okay, I was thinking it was 7, but thanks for catching that for me.
And on Saturday, we're headed to Mobile, and it's going to be a 3 p.m. tip, which is going to be kind of nice. The guys can get out of there by 6 o'clock and be home in a decent hour on after the last couple the last road trip, last 2 road trips, being out on out with a pretty good bus ride home. So this is going to be nice for the guys, I believe. So.
Yeah, especially school starts tomorrow, actually, which means the guys, they may go to class in the morning, probably head out to Monroe in the afternoon. They'll miss class Thursday and Friday. So getting home and being able to attend, Monday's Martin Luther King Day. So but getting home and having an extra day to prepare for that, to get into the academic role before they're hitting the road again. And we talked earlier about how many road games we have here and how challenging it is.
Yes.
But we talk about it's Alabama now. They're 7-9 overall. They're 1-3 in the league, which means they actually were, what's that? 6-6 in the pre-conference. But one thing I noticed in pre-conference, they had some pretty tough opponents. Now, they actually played pretty well early in the season. You looking at their schedule there?
I do. I have it up. You got Florida Atlantic, Alabama, Oklahoma, New Mexico. So
yes. Look at those three games, Alabama, Oklahoma, New Mexico. Those were all very competitive games.
74-80, 55-65, 60-64. All losses, but you're right. All within the worst loss was a 10-point loss to Alabama, but which I know they were talking to the guys over at South Alabama, very disappointed, really felt like that was going to be a game that they should have won in Tuscaloosa last year, but they really thought they had the opportunity to pull on Alabama this year. So tough loss for them, three in a row.
Yeah. Yeah, those were three money games for them, I'm sure. Was Alabama 2-for-1?
I don't know what their there for them.
Regardless, they played pretty competitive in pre-conference. So I'm surprised they're 1-3 in the league. This past weekend, they beat Arkansas State 63-45, which was their only conference win. And then they suffered a loss this past weekend on Saturday. Who'd they lose to on Saturday?
Texas State.
Yeah, it just shows how crazy this league is, you know. Texas State loses at home to ULM when the team goes over 20% and they lose, and they hear against Texas, against South Alabama, they win on the road. There's no rhyme or reason to any of this these games. You can't ever tell who's going to win any. But Alabama has two transfers as their main guys. They seem to have transfers every year. Their best guard is number 4, a guy named Isaiah Moore. He's transferred from a school called Franklin Pierce, which I've never heard of, which must be Division III, lower NIA. But he had over 20 in both games over the weekend. Their best inside guy who had a double-double in both games is Kevin Samuel, who's a 7-foot transfer from Florida Gulf Coast. Florida Gulf Coast a few years ago had a pretty good team that actually, I think, went to the Sweet 16 maybe 6 or 7 years ago. They're down south of Tampa. So as usual, South Alabama has transfers, and with a 7-9 record and a 1-3 record in the league, I'm wondering if the natives there are getting restless.
Well, you know, it's funny you bring that up, because I was going to ask you that question. I don't think Rich Riley is very well liked there, quite honestly, because of he doesn't tend to build teams. He did the same thing when he was at Nichols. And I was going to ask you your thought on it, but I kept going back and forth wondering whether it was a good thing to ask you. I think, yes, I think he's got to do something this year or he may be gone as well.
I think if he has a losing record, and right now he's on that record, let's hope that continues on Saturday.
Yes.
Look at their stats. They scored 68. They gave up 66. They've also had, you know, we talked about how well they played on the road and some tough losses, but they also had some non-D1 wins, you know, where they elevate the scores. So it's hard for me to get a handle on that team. You know, they beat Arkansas State by 18, and then they lose at home to Texas State. Yeah, so they're 1-3 overall. I just can't figure them out. Maybe that's just having so many transfers.
I just don't think they gel well with that many transfers. I just don't think I don't think it's good for the game and good, you know, bringing one or two guys in, I can see, but they tend to bring in multiple guys every year. And now it's even worse, because before he was able to bring guys in, but they had to sit out a year. So they were there, they were getting to practice, they were getting acclimated to being teammates and everything. Now the guys come in and they can play immediately. I don't think that's a recipe for winning every year.
Yeah, but it's rampant throughout all of college basketball. Look how often we preview our upcoming opponents and how many transfers are the key guys.
Oh, absolutely. No doubt.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just FYI.
I agree. It's not good for the game. I hope they actually put the year sit out rule. You go back to our 18 team. Yeah. In the 17 year, Frank Bartley was a transfer who's a pretty good player. But we had three guys sitting out for major schools. And the following year, they were ready to go. You know, I'm talking about Gantz, Stroman, and Marchetti. Yeah, I don't think it would have been as effective had they been ready to go day one.
No, and that was kind of my point that I was making, is that they had the ability to gel as a team and teammates prior to playing. So,
yeah. Well, as far as Richie Riley goes, I would not be surprised if he looking for a new job. But let's hope we can make that happen on Saturday. It's going to be a big game for us on Thursday. I think when we had the last road trip, the disappointment of losing to Coastal Carolina affected us in the first half against Old Dominion and didn't really start turning it on until the second half. So regardless of how it turns out on Thursday, we need to be ready to play on Saturday afternoon.
That was one of the biggest things that Coach Robe used to talk about is being able to flush that game. Got to be able to flush the loss. Basketball is closer to baseball than it is to football because you have so many games, so many more games than you do in football, and you're not a week apart. Football gives you the opportunity a week apart to much easier flush out the last game, get away from the game for a couple of days, come back and practice hard, and then play the next weekend. Basketball and baseball doesn't give you that opportunity to do that. So it's much more,
especially with a Thursday, Saturday, you know, on the road, you're playing at home on playing Thursday night and very often Saturday afternoon, you're traveling a day in between.
Yep.
And so you're not really practicing a lot other than a shoot around on the, around the day of the game. So keys to this game to me are, this weekend are, if we don't shoot the ball well from three, as we did in the first half, in both of the two home games, we have to keep playing defense regardless if the shots are not falling. And, you know, the last four road games that we played against quality opponents, going all the way back to Drake, our first half threes have not fallen. So I don't know if that's going to happen. Maybe it can. You know, like we talked about, having the technique was better on a lot of the guys' shots this week. They left Cantrell open. He made them. Yeah, you know, they left Jalen open in the next game. He made him. But if that doesn't happen, you have to keep playing. We got to keep our assist and turnover numbers down. And I want to assist up and the turnovers down better than our opponents. I'll conclude by saying we've talked a lot about teams, folks. I remember someone telling me for junior college players, it takes about half a season for them to get through. Now, teams have played Division I ball. But we're about halfway. We hit the halfway point of the season here. And he's been fine all year long. But is he taking it to another level? He's going to be one of the point guards we'll always remember here in Caden Lower, Caden Hitch, because he's got two more years after this one if he wants to stay here. And I think he should be conference player of the week. Maybe his numbers scoring-wise in the second game went against Georgia State won't show it. But he controlled that game as well. He's playing much better on defense than on the road trip. He's really good at going to his left, you know, which most people – prefer going to the right, but even when they're cutting off his left, he's dribbling back out and going back right. So he's the guy I want to highlight as we conclude here. I also think the way he's running the team, you can tell it's sort of a team leader, knows what's going on there and doing what the coaches want to him. So he's the guy I'm shouting out for the last two games, and hopefully he continues it the next two games.
Can we go back to something, not to something, but I want to make a comment and get your thoughts on it, because you know, Garnett goes out and scores 20, 22 points on Thursday night and then only scores six, but doesn't try even a three-pointer. And I know part of that was that probably after his game Thursday night, Georgia State came in and figured they had to shut down Kendall Garnett. But I like the fact that he didn't try to force that three-point shot, you know, that we see sometimes, you know, that allows a bad shot, then a long rebound, and all of a sudden the guys are fast breaking the other way. Do you kind of think that played into the game as well? You know,
no doubt. I think Georgia State's defense was a zone, but when the ball looked like it was going to go to Jordan, they collapsed. But on there, they were shading to Kentrell's side, and that's why some of the other guys got open looks. He did not force any shots. That's right. In fact, the one basket he made, believe it or not, they were overplaying him, and he actually drove to the basket and made a layup.
Yep.
That's very unusual for him, unless, you know, it's a fast break or something like that. So I like the way he played in both games. If they're going to take him away, somebody else has got to hit him. Greg's been doing a good job off and on hitting all year long. You know, Jalen's off the bench. I talk about Jalen a lot. I like the way he plays, even with shots off, because I think he's our best defensive guard. And Saturday night, he actually took some good shots and had good technique. So let's see if that continues. But you're right about Kentrell. He did not force the three when it was not there. Other guys were open, and they made the shots.
I just think we don't look – we kind of live in a vacuum, and we expect our guys to go out every night and perform at a high level, but we assume performing at that high level is scoring 20 points a night, where I think Garnett performed at a high level, but only had 6 points.
Yeah, and he made all four free throws. He had a layup.
Yep.
Somebody like Joe Charles performs at a high level every night, even though he may be shooting 1 for 8 from three because he makes up for it on the defensive end. He's one guy who plays good defense regardless of the shots are going down or not, and we need to have that carry on to the rest of them.
Well, to your point with Joe Charles, though, he only took 2 three-pointers. So to me, he saw that his shot might not have been off and didn't try forcing it as well either. I think both of them, even though it's not numbers that you see in the box scores all the time, are playing at a very high level. And I just wanted to recognize both of those guys. So yeah,
well done. And we'll, again, we played two at home. Let's see if they can do it on the road.
Well, Mike, I think the fun part about this team is that we're able to talk about a different person performing every night when we go over and either do a recap of the game or review the upcoming game. So I like this team. They're fun to watch. They're not always perfect, but I think they're always giving the effort that it is needed to win a game. So
yeah. And they play together. They're together. I saw a tweet by Joe Charles's dad over the weekend after the USM game. Talked about some of the things you talked about. One of the key points he said that when things go bad, they still encourage each other. That is the key in all sports. When things go bad, they stand together. Don't hang your head. Don't point fingers.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah.
And if they do that, we'll break through on the road here sooner than later.
I agree. All right, Mike, any last thoughts on either the upcoming games or the games that we just talked about? I know we've kind of jumped around here a little bit at the end, but any last words of wisdom?
No, I can't think of anything. I think we've covered everything.
All right, Mike. Appreciate your time as always. Again, a belated happy birthday. I know you enjoyed your time with your family over Christmas, so hopefully you got to spend a little more time with them or at least got to spend some time on the phone.
Yeah, I did. I was a bachelor for last week. My wife was out of town with one of my daughters, but the dog kept me company and got some projects at home done while she was out.
You know, I shouldn't say this, but the more time I spend with dogs, the less time I want to spend with people. So you might have had a good birthday there.
All right. Yeah. All right, happy to have my wife home.
Yes, yeah. I know. All right, you've been listening. We're talking. We've been talking basketball, Raging Cajun basketball with Mike Hebert. I'm Craig Melanson. We'll be back next week with another preview and post recap. Thank you.
Any redistribution or reproduction of any part or all of the contents in any form is prohibited, except, who the hell are we kidding? Distribute it, share it, put it in your podcast, broadcast it, or put it on social media. Just give credit where credit's due.